Farmer Insurance.
Good morning, Sunshine Country. It's 17 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock, Tuesday morning, August 12th, 66 degrees at our studios. I'm joined now, Dr. Devin Webster with me, oncologist and hematologist with Clarinda Regional Health Center. Dr. Webster, good morning to you.
Good morning, Aaron.
How are you this morning, Dr. Webster?
Well, it's a little early for me out here, but I'm doing well.
Nice and early cup of coffee this morning and start the day off right, Dr. Webster.
That's right, exactly.
How are things, how's summer been, by the way?
You know, well, summer, I love summer. I love all, you know, all types of seasons, but it's been very hot here in Portland, Oregon. In fact, we're in the middle of a heat wave right now. We're in the over 100 degrees every day.
Wow.
The past couple of days, and today and tomorrow, it's supposed to be hot.
Well, that's no good, Dr. Webster. That's not fun at all.
I know, it's not. Yeah, I feel kind of trapped in the air conditioning.
I think so. Head over to Cannon Beach and enjoy the beach. That's what you need to do.
Yeah, that's what I need to do. I can't go mountain biking on Cannon Beach. That's the problem.
So have you been mountain biking recently?
I have, yes. I'm still, you know, learning, but I'm getting a little braver and doing a little harder trails, and yeah.
That's awesome. We need to just talk about some of those endeavors sometime, Dr. Webster. I tell you, it's so inspirational to me, and I think people love those stories. So, but this morning we're not going to talk about mountain biking or adaptive skiing or any adventures in New Zealand. We are going to talk about blood thinners, kind of the next thing in line. So what are we talking about here, Dr. Webster? Kind of set this up for me.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about, there are two major types of blood thinners that people take and people hear about. One is really old, really cheap. It's been around a long time, and it's called Coumadin.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is a class of blood thinners called direct-acting oral anticoagulants, or we call them DOACs in the medical world. And these are newer drugs, and you've probably all seen commercials on TV for, you know, where golfers and mm-hmm. people who are out having active lives are taking a drug for their atrial fibrillation. These are the new anticoagulants. So I thought we should talk about the differences between them and how they work and stuff like that.
Okay. So let's get pretty basic here, Dr. Webster. What is a blood thinner?
That's a good start.
Yeah.
So blood thinner is a drug that it prevents your blood from clotting. And it doesn't actually make your blood any thinner. People always think that their blood is thinner. It's kind of an old-fashioned term when we call it a blood thinner, but it's really an anticoagulant. But if we gave you an anticoagulant drug, and me, I wasn't on an anticoagulant drug, and we poured some blood out into a cup and looked at how well it poured and how thin it was, it would mm-hmm. be the same, my blood and your blood.
Okay.
They would be equally thin or thick.
I'm thinking of viscosity for, like, motor oil. That's what I'm breaking this down to,
yeah,
Dr. Webster.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a fair comparison or not, but that's what I'm thinking
of
here.
Yeah, that is a fair comparison.
So,
and it does, our viscosity of our blood would not be any different
okay.
if we were on a blood thinner or not on a blood thinner.
All right. So next question, I kind of have the idea. So really, it's an anticoagulant. So why would one take a blood thinner? What's the purpose?
Well, it's to prevent your blood from clotting. And we do that in people who have certain diseases where they tend to clot more frequently, or if a blood clot would cause a major problem like a stroke. So, for example, I have patients with various blood disorders where they have a tendency to clot. There's something called factor V Leiden that people can have. There's something called the antiphospholipid syndrome that makes people clot.
Wow.
There are a number of these hematologic disorders.
Okay.
But then it's common for people to have atrial fibrillation, which
yep.
is a little arrhythmia of the heart. And if they have that, their blood can clot inside their heart, and then they could have a stroke. So we put them on blood thinners. People who have mechanical heart valves, there's a type of an old type of heart valve called the ball and cage valve, but these are mechanical, you know, made with metal and things like that. They need to be on blood thinners.
Okay.
So there are a number of reasons why people might need to be on a blood thinner.
What about if someone has a stent? Is that a blood thinner? Do you have a blood thinner for that?
Ah, that's a great question. Yeah, so yes, usually when stents are first put in, and it depends on the type of stent, the heart stent, or if a stent is put like in a leg or something, sometimes the stents are coated with a material that helps prevent them from getting narrow over time. And usually, yes, patients are usually put on a type of blood thinner initially when a stent is put in, and that is continued for a period of time depending on the stent.
All right.
So it may be 6 months to a year.
So, and I'm guessing that there's probably more to this than you've made it sound pretty straightforward so far, Dr. Webster, but how does a blood thinner work? What does it do?
Yeah, it's really complicated. Like when you're in medical school and you learn about the clotting cascade, which is what it's called, the coagulation cascade or the clotting cascade, it's one of those diagrams that kind of makes your head spin, and it's really hard to learn.
Sure, I bet.
So it's, you know how you add, have you ever made gravy, Aaron?
Mm-hmm. Not yeah, well, no. But I have, yes.
And you know how, you have this liquid, like the juice from the turkey, and then you add some stuff, mm-hmm. and you add flour, and the
yes.
flour suddenly clumps up and it makes it thick.
Yep.
That's a little bit similar to what happens with blood clotting. We have these factors in our blood that are floating around. They're called coagulation factors, and there are 13 of them, and they're inactive. So they're just floating around like waiting to do something, but they're not really active. They're in an inactive form. And then if we get a damage to a blood vessel, like, you chop your finger while you're cutting beans.
Sure.
That activates one of the factors. And then when that factor gets activated, it activates the next one and the next one and the next one and the next one. And so it's a cascade of these factors that get activated. And the end result is that little pieces of spaghetti-like proteins in your blood also get activated. Those are called fibrin. And something called thrombin gets activated, and the two together sort of form a mesh, like a bandage that goes and seals the area of bleeding.
Wow. That's pretty remarkable, Dr. Webster, isn't it? I mean, I find that truly remarkable, how that happens without any input from me, by the way. It just happens.
It is really...
Oh, wow.
It's really amazing. And if you want to have your mind boggled, just, Google clotting cascade and look at the diagram. And one of the confusing things is, even though there are 13 clotting factors, they don't get activated in order. So it's like I won't even go through the numbers, but they get activated all out of order, and it's very complex.
Wow!
But yes, it all happens naturally in our bodies.
Very cool. So then, how does that work with Coumadin?
Yes, so Coumadin, there are four factors of the 13 that are made in our liver and are dependent on vitamin K.
Okay.
And those are factors 2, 7, 9, and 10. And Coumadin inhibits the vitamin K-dependent factors from being made in the liver. So, in essence, you're lowering these factors 2, 7, 9, and 10, when you take Coumadin. So you're hitting four of the different blood coagulation factors, and that prevents your blood from clotting.
So it changes that coagulation cascade then by limiting those factors. Is kind of what...
Yep, it just kind of takes out those factors that are,
wow.
that are really important parts of the cascade, so the cascade can't happen.
Very cool. Now that's Coumadin. So what about the direct-acting oral anticoagulant, or the DOAC? What do they do? Talk to me about the DOACs.
Yeah, so these are newer, and rather than inhibiting the vitamin K-dependent factors, which is kind of not as specific as drug makers would like, so they decided to make drugs that just directly inhibit thrombin, which is factor 2A, or an enzyme called prothrombin, which is factor 10A.
Oh, wow.
So they basically directly inhibit thrombin or prothrombin. And thrombin and prothrombin, thrombin, it sounds like a clot, doesn't it? Thrombin.
It does. It sounds quite ominous.
Yeah, and a clot is actually called a thrombus. That's another name for a clot.
Okay.
So thrombus and clots that can go around your body and get into different places, that's called thromboembolic disease. So there you go.
All right.
So thrombin is like the end step in clotting, and it directly inhibits that.
Okay. So that's and by the way, we are visiting with Dr. Devin Webster, oncologist and hematologist with Clarinda Regional Health Center, discussing blood thinners. Now, that's one of the DOACs that you say is more of a newer line of products. Are there DOACs that we would recognize or that people might be aware of?
Yeah, so there are, excuse me, I have a frog in my throat.
It's early, Dr. Webster, that's why, it's early.
Yeah, so people might know the name Xarelto.
Sure.
Or Eliquis or Pradaxa.
Mm-hmm.
These are common DOACs that people are on. So I'm sure some of your listeners have heard of those.
Yeah, I think most of those are pretty common out there that people hear those, so.
Yeah.
How do you make the determination, either Coumadin or a DOAC? What's the delineation there, and why would one choose one over the other, or a doctor choose one over the other?
Yeah. Well, I will say that, you know, it's easier for doctors these days to prescribe a DOAC because we just give a set dose to the patient. So, you know, one of them we give 10 milligrams twice a day, and one of them we give 5 milligrams twice a day to every patient. You know, so it's a set dose, easy to write the prescription. You just write it and you're done. With Coumadin, you have to kind of find the dose for each patient. So you start them on a small dose, and then you have to check their blood after a few days to see how well their blood is clotting. And that test is called an INR test.
Okay.
And so, and then you have to adjust the dose and keep checking that test. So each patient's dose of Coumadin is very specific to that patient, and it might depend on their diet, other medications they're taking, their activity level, et cetera. So it takes a while to kind of get it dialed in. And then, you know, doing the blood tests and things are add complexity. And in fact, many places, including Clarinda Regional Health Center, we have what's called a Coumadin clinic, where we have nurses who are specifically trained to monitor that in patients and adjust their dose as needed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Once you get it dialed in, are you there, or does it change if my diet changes or some other factor? Do I have to go back and adjust my Coumadin dose?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in general, a lot of people, once you get it dialed in, you're there, and it's really their INR level stays very stable. But if you're someone who has a very erratic diet or very erratic activity levels, or, you know, you drink a lot of alcohol one day and then you don't for 2 weeks, I mean, you might be someone who it's harder to control your INR level, and it's harder to get dialed in.
Okay. Does one work better than the other?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, they work about the same. And in fact, in many instances, Coumadin is better, the old-fashioned Coumadin. So, for example, if you have a mechanical heart valve, this is something your listeners should know out there because they have mechanical heart valves.
Mm-hmm.
Coumadin is really the only blood thinner, the only anticoagulant that should be used in patients with mechanical heart valves.
Why is that?
The DOACs have not been shown to be as effective, and the clotting rate is higher with the DOAC.
Huh.
So now DOACs are being used for patients with mechanical heart valves, but that's kind of not considered the standard of care right now. So, yeah, mechanical heart valves is still Coumadin. And Coumadin actually has a slightly higher bleeding risk. So you might have also seen commercials on TV with lawyers who are saying, you know, have you been on Eliquis or Xarelto and had bleeding?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reality is that Coumadin has a higher bleeding risk than the DOAC.
There's a lot to consider, Dr.
Yeah,
Webster.
There's a lot to consider. And I'll tell you, the number one consideration is cost.
Tell me about that.
These DOACs are incredibly, incredibly expensive. And Coumadin literally costs pennies to dollars per month. It is a very, very cheap drug. DOACs for uninsured patients cost upwards of $800 to $1,000 per month.
Oh, wow.
And for patients with insurance, they still are paying the mid-500s to 600s per month for these drugs.
That's a huge difference, Dr. Webster.
It is a huge difference. And I have many patients who can't afford these drugs, or they come in and say, you know, they were in the ER and they got a blood clot in their leg and the doctor prescribed this drug and they went to the drugstore to get it and it was, you know, $547. And we try to find ways. In fact, this just happened yesterday. We try to see if there are coupons or ways we can lower the price. And it turns out that we really can't. Partly because these drugs are still new and they're protected under their patent.
Mm-hmm.
So even though there are generic forms of them, the generic forms have not been okayed by the drug company to be sold. So they're kind of still holding on to their patent rights, which they have for, I'm not sure how many years, 20 years or something after the drug comes on the market.
So even though one, for example, the DOAC may be the better and more appropriate prescription in whatever, like the scenario you're referring to, it's just unaffordable to the person, to the individual.
Yep. And then I really have to do some education and say, you know, you should, we could put you on Coumadin and it would cost nothing. It would cost you nothing. And there, people have a lot of resistance to taking Coumadin.
Well, so let's talk about that. Are there risks with either one of these? You mentioned some of the commercials and some of the side effects, not necessarily for these, but some of the ones I've seen recently. You know, I almost chuckle, Dr. Webster. Some of these side effects, not that they're funny and side effects are funny, but some of them are like, oh my goodness. Are there risks with these medications?
Yeah, the biggest risk is bleeding. And it's not that the medication make you bleed. If you weren't already going to bleed. But if you have, you know, so for example, it's not going to open up a blood vessel and cause you to bleed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You still have to have a reason for bleeding. So, but if you do have a reason for bleeding, let's say you have a stroke and a blood vessel bursts in your brain and you're on these medications, you can have, you know, a life-threatening bleed. And that risk is low. It's about 0.2% per year for patients on these drugs, and it's higher, a little bit higher in Coumadin compared to the DOAC. And people can have, you know, for example, if they have GI bleeding, like let's say they have a colon cancer they didn't know about, and then they start taking a blood thinner, well, they can lose more blood through their colon and become anemic. So if they already have a reason for bleeding, they might have a problem with bleeding, or if they get in a bad car accident, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we always have to talk to patients about and patients have to consider. That being said, usually people are afraid of the bleeding risk, but once they're on these anticoagulants and they don't have problems with bleeding, they just kind of forget about it and go on with their lives, and it's not really a big deal.
One of the beautiful things about summer, Dr. Webster, is all of the great and wonderful vegetables that are in season and just delicious.
Yeah.
Can you eat those if you're on Coumadin? I've heard you can't. That true?
I'm so glad you brought that up because this is one of my pet peeves. Pet peeves. I don't know. I think somewhere along the way, some well-intended Coumadin clinic decided that, you know, you shouldn't eat any vegetables. And the reason is, vegetables have a lot of vitamin K in them, particularly dark green leafy vegetables.
Okay.
So we're giving you medicine to try to, you know, inhibit the vitamin K dependent factors, and we're lowering your vitamin K levels and lowering those factors. And then if you go and eat vegetables, maybe you'll increase your vitamin K. But the message that gets sent to patients is wrong. They people, you know, nurses and doctors tell patients you can't eat any vegetables. Well, that's just not true. You can eat however many vegetables you were eating before you started Coumadin. So if you, you know, the difference is that if you eat a lot of green leafy vegetables, you may need a higher dose of Coumadin. It may take a little more Coumadin to counteract that vitamin K. But if you eat vegetables, you should continue eating vegetables. And I can tell you, I have people who've been on Coumadin for 20 years and they have not eaten a vegetable for 20 years.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's terrible. And I say that, no, you can eat vegetables. You know, so yes, you can. I think that what I caution patients is, you know, if you never eat a vegetable in your life, don't go out and eat 10 spinach salads in a row when you're on Coumadin.
Probably a bad choice. Absolutely, yes. Dr. Webster, probably a bad choice. But you can. The point is you can. It's an old wives' tale, incorrect information from somewhere.
Yes, right. You know, it's kind of like with everything. It's consistency and, you know, moderation and, you know, don't go on an all green leafy vegetable diet.
Right. I'm with you. So the other thing, Dr. Webster, you mentioned people, it's rat poison. It's Coumadin is just rat poison. I bet you've heard
well,
that one too.
It's rat poison, yes. But it's because, you know, it's a blood thinner. And it works as well in rats as it does in humans, probably better, because they get a super high dose of it. And it makes them spontaneously bleed and die. And so it's a very cheap and good rat killer, and it can be put in, you know, all kinds of yummy nuggets for the rats to eat. But that doesn't mean that it's not safe for humans. So it is a blood thinner that is used as a rat poison. It is not a rat poison that is being used as a blood thinner.
Important distinction, Dr. Webster. That is an important distinction, without a doubt. Dr. Devin Webster with me this morning from Clarinda Regional Health Center, oncologist and hematologist. Interesting stuff. And you know, Dr. Webster, there when you start talking to people and visiting with people, there are a lot of people that are on blood thinners. Many, many people.
Yeah.
For one reason or the other.
And that's why I wanted to do this again today because, you know, just yesterday and in the and even, you know, last week, we've had a number of patients with having to have these discussions about Coumadin and vegetables. And I said to Sarah, Sarah Lockman, who's my PA, I said, I need to do this on the radio again so people start eating their vegetables.
<laughs> <laughs> Don't let your Coumadin be a deterrent to your vegetables. But don't go crazy with it. But, yeah, just enjoy your vegetables.
Yeah. And, you know, the fact is, I mean, if you eat lots of vegetables while you're on Coumadin, that INR level might go down a little bit, and you might have to take a slightly higher dose, but that's why we monitor it, and that's no big deal.
Very good. Dr. Devin Webster with me. What else do we need to be aware of, Dr. Webster? You have your whole day in front of you now.
I do, and I'm awake, and I'm getting my coffee going, you know, it's getting in my system, and yeah.
time to get going. It's going to be hot, though. You're going to have to stay in the AC today.
I am. All but right. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I always wish there was a way... Your listeners, I always wonder what questions they have. And I wish there was a way that they could ask me their questions.
Well, they can reach out to me and let me know. They have my contact information, and I can get that to you is what we can do. So if someone had a question about Coumadin or DOAX or any of the other things we've talked about through the years, we can visit about that too. And I can be happy to pass those questions along to you. So.
Yeah, and if any of your listeners want, if there are specific topics that they're really interested in or they're wondering about or there's something they heard on the news that they would like to hear more about, you know, definitely encourage them to let you know, and then I'm happy to talk about whatever people are interested in.
Very good. I appreciate it very much. Dr. Webster, and I'll pass that information along to you. Dr. Webster?
Yes, and...
Yes, ma'am.
You have a great day. I hear you're getting some rain out there.
Yes, we've had, it has been unbelievable, Dr. Webster, unbelievable. The rain that we've had and the crops are beautiful. The grass is beautiful. It's just lush and green and it's pretty remarkable, really. So,
Hey, send me a picture.
Will do.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Webster. Make it a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Dr. Devin Webster with me, oncologist and hematologist from Clarinda Regional Health Center.
It's time for an update on what's happening with the weather in Sunshine Country, brought to you at this hour as a service of Mickey Anderson and the folks at Red Oak Chrysler Dodge Jeep on